Yeah, we're on.
Okay. Kishkoich, everyone, for coming. Shalom Aleichem. So we have to give a Shabbat Vayda to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that we made it, and we're here. If you're here, that means you made it to the summer, right? Somebody once went for an interview to become a teacher, and the principal asked him, give me two good reasons why you want to go into Chinuch and teach. He said he has two reasons, July and August. But it's still August, it's still Ben Azmanim, and in the B'smedesh you hear a resounding Kol Torah. The whole world has Ben Azmanim now, so some of the world has to stand on someone's chus. So you guys are holding it up, right? You're holding up the entire world. So a nephew of mine, sorry? Mayor, you, I mean you, yes, of course you, what do you mean? And everyone else here. And that's true. The other side of the equator, we'll worry about that. We'll worry about our side of the equator. I have a nephew, really geschmacking a man. So he told me that he went to see the Grand Canyon. He went with his family. And he's on the plane, he took Spirit Airlines. Anyone ever took Spirit Airlines? It's an experience on its own. I went with Spirit Airlines once. There was a dog, I don't know what kind of a dog, but it was licking my neck the entire time. That was an interesting experience. Every time I turned around, the owner gave me a look like, why are you getting in the way of my dog? I thought it was an airplane. The good thing about Spirit Airlines is that there's no nisayon of not looking at the movie. You know why? There's no movie. You don't have to worry about the person leaning back on the chair because they're like regular, they're like hard bus chairs. You know what I mean? And it was really packed. This was, they wanted to charge me $30 for my Taliesin film. I thought that was a little overdone. Then they came by, you know, they offered water, $3. That was just for the water. I don't know how much they wanted for the cup. And when the plane was packed, jammed, like sardines, and like an hour and 2 hours into the flight, like a half hour before landing, one of the stewardesses says, being that you're all sitting together, so cramped, you know, you should have to do some exercise. So I want everyone to do some exercise to get, shouldn't be any blood clots. So I want everyone to lift their hands. And Oilam Gailam, 200 people lift their hands. Stand up, and like stands up, all of a sudden you don't need seatbelts, right? And lean all the way over, and try to touch the floor. People are leaning all the way over, try to touch the floor. Then she says, while you're there, please pick up all the garbage. That's what it's like. Not sure if that was a joke, or... But interestingly enough, you know that they have one of the most highest customer satisfaction rates. Why? Because people's expectations are lower. So that means that a key to Simchas HaChayim is to lower our expectations. You understand? Why spend a lot of money on a first class ticket and then be so angry because the wine wasn't exactly what you ordered? You lower your expectations and you get a free economy ticket and you have a much better life. That's a very big key to Shalom Bayis and a lot of other things, Bez Hashem Yisbarach, which we'll talk. Anyway, getting back to my nephew. So he's flying over the Grand Canyon and they get up. And they're saying they're going to ask, they're going to play a game, contest. This is what the stewardess says, not picking up the garbage. And if you have any of these items in your hand, it can't be in your suitcase. There's going to be a list of items. And if you have any of those items in your pocket, okay, and you can respond within 5 seconds by pressing one of the buttons that turns on the light, if the light works or something, then you get 1,000 mileage points. So everyone want to play? Everyone says, yeah, we want to play. So the first question the stewardess asks is, does anyone have a tattoo of a plane on them? No, my nephew did not have one. And so one guy had a tattoo of a plane. Why? I don't know. And why has a tattoo? Not a tattoo of a plane. That's what he had. The second question was, does anyone have a souvenir from Newark Airport? So one guy had. Third question, does anyone have a souvenir of the Grand Canyon? Okay, no one had. The next question was, anyone have foreign currency? So 3/4 of the plane was Chinese. They all went up, right? And they were fighting over who answered first. Then they said, here comes the jackpot question. The jackpot question was for 5,000 points. And the jackpot question was, does anyone have a flip phone? And of course, my nephew, who doesn't have a smartphone, pulled out his flip phone. And said, me? And I said, no, we don't believe it. The only reason they were giving 5,000 mileage points because they didn't think anyone has it. And everyone turned around. We heard one person say, must be some old geezer. I'm just quoting what he said. So he says, no, I think, I said, I'm a lot younger than you are. And so somebody said, I bet it doesn't really work. So he said, okay, make a call, you know. So they made a call to see if it really works. It's amazing. They tell you you can't call because you're all the planes are going to crash because you're interfering with the control tower. Suddenly you were able to call. And he got his 5,000 things. And everybody was lining up to take pictures of him to see who has the flip phone. And even on the way out, the pilot was waiting for him. Says, oh, you're the flip phone guy? He says, why do you want to know? He says, no, we just want to know. He said, they spoke to headquarters. They said, remove that question because there may be more Hasidic Jews flying on this plane. We don't want to have to start giving out 5,000 things. So, I'm not getting into the issue of phones or technology. I'm just saying that, let's say we have our Nesiyonis. Try to picture what's going to be La'asid Lavi when Mashiach comes. And whatever your particular Nesiyon or test is. So imagine whoever Eliyahu Navi Shliach or he himself is going to get up and say, okay, who has this? You know, you're getting a certain amount of mileage points. And we're going to have to answer, or we're going to answer at that given moment. And what Eliyahu is going to ask for is going to be your particular Nesiyonis, your tests in life. They're going to say, you have that? How did you get that? He says, that's what I was tested. The Zohar says, less Nahaira, there's no light, it doesn't come from darkness. Less Merirus, less Mesikus, there's no sweetness, it doesn't come from bitterness. It's our challenges that we are going to be proud of, more so than anything else. And one of the great challenges in this world, in the world that we're living in, is dealing with pressure, dealing with the day-to-day pressure. And dealing with, just being upbeat under pressure and everything else that's going on. So there's this famous story, this Rav on Purim, or self-proclaimed Rav, gets up there and he says, Torah, he says, Yayin is gematria lekach. Wine is gematria sponge cake. In Yiddish, lekach is sponge cake. I'm not sure why. So someone dares to ask Akasha, he says, Yayin is 70. And lekach is 138. So he says, so drink another cup of wine? He says, but that's still not good. It's going to be two times, that's going to equal to 140. He says, drink another cup of wine. He says, wait a minute, that's going to be 210. He says, drink another cup of wine. He says, it's still, then it's going to be way off. Yeah, but then it won't make a difference. Then everything will be good, right? How does the story go? This guy comes in and says, my father, he applies to be a teller. He says, what experience do you have? He says, my father owned a bank. Okay, we'll ask you some questions. If somebody deposits 5,000, yeah, and he withdraws 3,000, how much is left in his account? He says, 1,000. The guy says, you don't know math. He says, you don't know my father, right? We live in a society that calculates for us whether we're going to be happy or not. Insurance companies calculate for us that you're not going to be happy unless they want to show us gloom and doom. There are those who charge that the Democrats will do everything within their power to create a recession so that they can get in, right? We live in a society that manipulates numbers. Not because they think they're lying. They're manipulating numbers in Shem Shemayim. That's the problem. That's the big problem. And the consumer, so to speak, we're the victim of it. Madison Avenue, all of advertising is trying to convince you why you have to buy the product. Life insurance, or Rietti talks about this a lot. You know, when life insurance first came out, it wasn't called life insurance. It was called death insurance. But it's very hard. It's hard enough for a guy to ring your bell 100 times and wants to sell you a life insurance policy. Can you imagine someone wants to sell you a death insurance policy? Credit cards, by the way, weren't called credit cards. They were called debt cards. And that's really what they are. But if you're going to get a letter in the mail, guess what? $150,000 of free debt just for you. You're not going to go running to fill out the application. So they simply call it credit. But it's not credit. But the fact is, we're pressured into a lot of our, right? If you're not going to pass the test the first time around, if you're not going to get your degree right away, if it's not going to get into the course that you want, right? We live with a certain amount of pressure, which beats down on us. And a lot of times, mathematically speaking, things don't make sense. It doesn't make sense that I could be happy. And that's when, not to drink the other cup of wine, but there is a way to get into Emunah and Betachin, where it's what that Purim Rav said. At one point, you'll see the math is going to work out, even if it doesn't work out. Think about the events of the summer, right? The personal tragedies that took place, mind-boggling. Think what's going on in the world, in the Iranian influence around Eretz Yisrael, the political scene here in Eretz Yisrael, trade wars, missile testing, nuclear explosions. Am I cheering you up? The world playing musical chairs with oil tankers. I mean, think what's going on over here. If we would do simple calculations of where this world is headed, it would be very gloom and doom. But I'll tell you a secret. If your grandparents would have made those calculations, we wouldn't be here. They didn't. They moved on. So it's a story I like to say. This Yidala came here with an extra pair of shoes and the shirt on his back. Made it out of Auschwitz. Came to America. He had nothing. You know, and he pushed the push cart, and he pedaled it, and you know, this person goes out on a date, and he says, you know, my grandfather lost everything. Thank you so much. He lost everything in the Great Depression. So he says, really? Like, he had major stocks, and he lost everything in the Great Depression. He had buildings? No, some guy committed suicide and landed on his push cart. Right? This guy had a push cart. He pushed it around. And he worked his way, and he borrowed money, and he failed, and borrowed money, and they borrowed money, made the mistake of borrowing money, thank you very much, from organized crime, and they went after him. And he just didn't give up, and he wound up getting himself a little bit of a house, and from the house he mortgaged it, and bought another house, and near 20, 30 years passed, and suddenly he had huge office buildings, and suddenly he was, you know, he wasn't the big boys. And he had office buildings, and condos, and limos, and sailboats, and summer homes. But he was an old-timer. You know how he had he had a very interesting accounting system. He had two boxes of cigars after he emptied out his cigars. And one he put in the money, and the other he put in his bills. And he missed from one to the other. That's how his payroll worked. He had a whole... Because his son goes to college and comes back, and he has a degree in accounting and in business management. And finally he says, Dad, you can't run a business like this. He says, why? He says, you don't know what's going on. You don't know. You don't even know if you're making money. You're running a multi-billion dollar business out of cigar boxes. So he told him like this, I know exactly if I'm ahead of the game. He said, how do you know? He says, it's very simple, cheshbon. Take the value of what I have, 6 office buildings, 12 condos, 10 limos, 8 sailboats, 3 summer homes, go ahead, minus the shirt and the two pants, you know what I mean, that I have, minus the shirt and the two pants, and then you'll see what I have. And you put the two together, and then you'll see, what I have. You'll see the amount of whatever the difference is, you know, shirt between two shoes and a shirt. Yeah.
Anybody drive a Jeep? I'm parking the driveway inside here.
A Jeep?
Yeah, Jeep. The driveway. You don't want to tow it, so if anybody park a Jeep, let me know now. Because I'm gonna tow it. Okay.
Anyone have a Jeep? I left my Jeep at home, so I didn't bring my Jeep. I came with my scooter. So. Okay. So there's minus there's a shirt on my back from all the office buildings. You'll see how much I have. So really, what's he saying? He's saying that you're living in a world where you're going quarter by quarter. I'm looking at my whole life. And my whole life, I'm way ahead of the game. If we believe in Nitzchius, if we believe we're not here in this world for the first time, who knows how many times we're down here in this world, and we believe that we have a future, and down here is just a little bit of an oasis where we have an opportunity to be Kailam and Oilam Nitzchi. So the math doesn't have to make sense in our life. The math in your life is going to tell you, perhaps, you know, I have every reason to give up. But in the long run, the math is totally different. It's only because I'm looking at it in a very short thing. The biggest businesses in the world had losing quarters. So what's the big deal? So I love to say this story. In the good old days, I used to record on tape recorders. You know what a tape recorder is? I think there's one in the Museum of Natural History in America. Right? So now you record on, you have these recording programs. I'm sure Mayer used them in Tori anytime. So a good story is supposed to go like, you know, you start out a little bit, then there's a climax, and you see the waves. And these waves measure the volume of your voice. It measures the emotion of your voice, and it measures everything. And then it either ends with a climax, ends with an anticlimax, or it ends with a little ending. So a good story should look like, I'm not chalk, but a good story, chalkboard, oh, how prehistoric. But, you remember these? I remember, oh wow. You teach ever threw a piece of chalk at you? Right. Eraser? Right. You ever took the erasers and bang, 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 and the whole class was full of dust? Boy, did I sit in the principal's office for that one. Anyway. But try to figure like this. So try to imagine, okay, that a good story, you know, is going to wave, and then it gets calm. And then when you do a professional story in a studio, they come in and they measure the waves. So like just two ways of saying a story. You can say a story, you know, I was sitting in a room, and it was very dark, and all of a sudden I felt somebody on my neck, and like I turned around, I wonder who it was. Then you can say a story. I was sitting in a room, and suddenly, you know, that's how you... There's storytelling, and somebody got scared over there. Okay, there's storytelling, and there's storytelling. So they made me go to this course. This guy was telling me how to say stories. I'm not saying stories, it's before this guy was in his training wheels worked out. So he's saying in a good story, two mistakes people make. Either you're screaming too much, story has to start slowly, and then get very exciting, then come to an exciting end, or it's dull the whole way through. Okay, great. And we can tell the waves and see how the story is being recorded. So I say a story, and I realize the high part. I say, I want to do the high part again. I think I could have done it better, like the exciting part, the dramatic part. It was only 30 seconds. So the engineer says, no problem, I'll do copy and paste. Just do over that part. So I do that part where I'm screaming and jumping and whatever it is. And then this chochem walks in. He says, no good. I said, why not? He says, look, the whole story from beginning to end, you're screaming. You can't start screaming. Can't start so excited. You have to start slowly and get excited. I said, this is only the 30 seconds that I'm clipping in from the high part of the story. Oh, okay, then it makes sense. Because he takes it and he pastes it into the whole story. Sorry, I thought it was the whole file. No, it's not the whole file. So then I said to myself, now imagine like this. Imagine a person says, my whole life, I don't have one moment of peace. My whole life is just one series of challenges, one after the other. What is Hashem doing to me? So Hashem says, because you were on this world already 5-6 times. You're down here to fix a certain thing. So I know if you look at your life from the day you were born till 120, why so many challenges? But you'll see when we copy and paste it into your whole life and you'll see who you were at Har Sinai, who you were supposed to be in the course of your life, it'll make perfect sense. So whether you're complaining things are going dull or things are getting too excited, trust me, it is exactly where it's supposed to be. But we don't live long enough to be able to see the picture where it is. So there's a fascinating study I want to share with you. In World War II, the Navy studied the surviving planes that came back. And they looked at them, and they saw where the bullets hit the plane, where the damage was. And they said, okay, we're going to work on this. So it means that if the enemy is shooting at the plane, the likelihood is the plane is going to be hit from this angle and this angle. And therefore, they were going to reinforce those parts of the plane or rearm them. There was a Jewish statistician, Hungarian-born. His name was Abraham Wald. And he came from Hungary, and he worked himself up, and he worked for the Navy. And he said, you guys have it all wrong. He said, you should reinforce the parts of the plane that would come back unscathed, that were not hit. Can anyone tell me why? L'chayr, the Navy's right. You want to reinforce the parts of the plane that you see are vulnerable to be hit. So wherever there were holes on the plane, that's the part you're going to reinforce. He kind of just the opposite.
The hit survived.
Right. He said, wait a second. He says, the planes that didn't come back that you have to study. Right? These planes were hit and survived. I guess with a lot of experience here, getting hit and surviving, so you know it. These planes were hit and survived. So that's reinforced. It's the planes that you don't see. The planes that never made it back. And they adapted his thing. They realized what he was saying is right. And they adapted the whole way of thinking. He was a Hungarian. He should know these things. Why? Because if you're used to a real Hungarian chomp every Shabbos morning, it's also mathematically you shouldn't survive it. So and he did. So obviously he had a different mahalach in his things. I said this just 2 days ago, right? This king couldn't fall asleep. All the sleeping medicines didn't work. They got a yiddler that said, "Let me try." The Yid said, "Let me try," and the Yid came, and the Yid gave him sleeping. He brought him a plate of chont, real English chont, Hungarian chont. The king was out for 3 days. When he woke up, he said, "This is an amazing sleeping medicine. Maybe we can use this in war. You know, put the enemy to sleep." He says, "I want all the scientists to study it." They came back. They said, "Did you study it?" He says, "Yeah." "Do you understand how it worked?" He says, "We know how it knocked you out, but we still didn't figure out how you got up. That's what we can't figure out. What made you up?" Okay. So, how does it go? A bacher eats chont Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Right? When you get married, you start eating chont Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Wald's arguments were accepted as genius. Because 99, and it's used today, for example, the state of New Hampshire, at least as it was a couple of years ago, does not require you to wear a helmet when you drive a motorcycle. It's part of the liberalism, land of the free, government should not mix in. No, if you want to get killed, you know what I mean? You know, how could you be so rude to tell me to wear a helmet when I'm driving, right? You know, the kid that's driving his bike and he goes, "Ma, look, no hands," you know, "Ma, look, no feet." Then he goes, "Ma, look, no teeth," right? That's what happens. So of course there's lobbyists and they came to argue. And one of the person that was lobbying to keep this law, which I think they did, that you don't need helmets in New Hampshire, is because, at least that's how it was a few years ago, this is what his taina. He says once they made a law about helmets, emergency rooms reported much more injuries of people coming in with motorcycle injuries. And he taina was because they're wearing a helmet, they're driving much more wilder and they're being much more careful. So therefore you see the helmets are counterproductive. But the obvious mistake in that is because they were wearing helmets, they were brought to the emergency room, not to the morgue. That's why they were surviving. So of course you saw more injuries. That's the way it was. But this is a mistake that we make in life also. We see ourselves failing, right? I'm not davening, I'm not learning, it's not going. You know why it's not going? Because it's working. Because you are where you're supposed to be. It's because the Rabbi Hashem says, okay, we have a mahalach over here. It's coming. You know, and when you start making the cheshbon, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. I was once working with a kid. He said, you know, all my life I wanted to be Reb Chaim Eiser. All of a sudden he stopped learning. I said, what happened? He said he heard Reb Chaim Eiser finish Shas when he was 16. He's already 17. He's not even halfway through. He gives up. We create this pressure, which is unreal. It's not what the Rabbi Hashem wants from us. The Rabbi Hashem wants us to be who we are. I don't know why I'm on my thing, but this Yidla is sitting over here, and there's a white supremacist Nazi sitting next to him. And he goes, "You Jews think you're so smart." He says, "I don't know." Yeah, he says, "I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. We'll ask each other questions. Whoever stumps the other one will have to pay the other guy $1,000. So the Yidla says, "I just have a dollar." He says, "Yeah, okay, fine. You stump me, I give you $1,000. Okay, if I stump you, you give me your dollar." He says, "Fine. You go first." So he asks this guy, he says, "Okay, I'll ask you first." Says the Yid, "What has 10 eyes, 7 wings, and 4 tails?" He goes, "I give up." Gives him the $1,000. Goes, "What is it?" He goes, "I don't even know. Here's a dollar." Okay. Tonight's the Satmar Rebbe's yard site. Somebody once came to him for his mama. She was in desperate straits. He needed $10,000 to get out of a certain chayv. Else, he really would his whole shalom bias. Everything was on the line. So the Rebbe said, he wasn't even a chassid, but it was clear that what he was saying was true. And the Rebbe told the Gabbai, "Give him $9,999. So he said to the Rebbe, "You're giving him already. Why a dollar short?" He said, "He needs more than $10,000. He didn't have the guts to ask for more. So he asked me for $10,000. He says, "If I give him $10,000, he's going to go, 'Oh, could I ask for $15,000? If I give him $9,900, he'll be happy. It's a good thing I only asked for $10,000. You know? You have to understand, when less is more, when more is less. Where are you? Where are you going? So, that in mind, let us see this piece of Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes, I want to talk more about who he was, maybe next time. I think we had our Hagdama stretched here a little bit. So, Sfas Emes was the second Gei Rebbe. He was the grandson of the Chiddush Erim, who was the first Gei Rebbe. His father died. The Chiddush Erim had 10 children. They all died during his lifetime. Which is a story on its own. But right now, let's see this piece. The first piece of it. Re'eya noichi noisa lefneichem hayoim. The pasuk says, "I will give you today bracha uklala." I will give you today bracha and klala. And we get to choose which one. How does this work? God's going to give us bracha or klala. Pirish, shabechira biyad ha'adam. You have the free choice. Livchar tai vayra. As re'eya noichi noisa lefneichem hayoim bracha uklala. I am giving you the free choice. The Omar, this he's referring to his grandfather, as he often does, that's what the Rashi Tevis is, Av Adoini Zal, his grandfather, the Chidushim, Shalzeh, that's the reason, Mevarchnu, we make the bracha, Hanoisen L'Sechvi Vin. We make the bracha, Hanoisen L'Sechvi Vin. So the Velt says a vart like this, you know, chickens, roosters are supposed to make a lot of noise in the morning and they wake you up. They actually make their noise when? Not at, if you ever want to buy a rooster and check this out, I once slept near a farm, they proved prove this to be right. They actually, before dawn, it's prior to dawn, it's at the darkest time of the night that the roosters start crowing. Because and the rooster understands that in the darkest time, that means light is coming. The light is coming afterwards. And that's why, that's what he's being meramis over here. That's how we make the bracha in the morning. Those moments of life, you want to throw in the towel, hey, hang on in there. The light is right behind it. I'm giving you the day. So listen to a very novel interpretation. What does this mean, I'm giving you the day? Pirish, hayoyim, sheyesh b'chol yoyim, every single day you have b'chira chadasha. Every single day you have a new range of b'chira. After a person sins, mistalekes habchira me'ya'ada. You either lose your complete b'chira or part of your b'chira. K'ma shekasev ha'rashayim b'rashus libam, rashayim are in the rashus of their own hearts. Every time we do a mitzvah, we're encouraged to do another mitzvah. It's easier. First time you sit down to learn, it's tough. You tough it out, the next time it's easier, or the next week it's easier. Same is true for averus. The first time there's a guilty conscience, the second time there's less of a guilty conscience, the third time it becomes, right, it says, kiva sha'over adam avera, person's over an avera, the shanaloi, and he repeats it, nasaloi keheter, becomes as if it's mutter. What happens the third time? Says the katzka, the third time it becomes a mitzvah. But the more we do an avera, the more we lose our p'chira, we lose our free choice. What happens is every single day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu readjusts it from where we are. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will never keep us. If you're alive, you still have some level of prayer. If things were left to their own destiny, then every single day as we would accumulate averos, we would be stuck. We would be stuck in a world of sin. We would never be able to get out of it. What happens when you wake up in the morning is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu readjusts it. Because you have to have some level of prayer. And that's Re'ei Enoichi Noisi Lefneichem Hayoyim. You're going to wake up tomorrow morning, you have a new shot at it. You have another chance to be able to break in. I tried it right after a tinnitus. If you're halfway digging into a pizza, it's very hard to stop at that moment. I was once I'm not into barbecues, but I was speaking by a fundraiser. And this guy was like arranging the whole barbecue, and he kept telling me it was a fundraiser for Atzalva someplace. And he finally had his spare ribs with the barbecue sauce, and he sat down, and he cut it, and his Atzalva radio went off, and he gave me this look. And, you know, and he took off leaving the thing over there. So I said to him, you know, that's Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael has that kayach. So somebody once came to the stipler, and he said that he was failing miserably in an inyan of kiddusha, which he's tested with, particularly before he's married, he's tested with. And he's failing with it. And what he did was, he made a neder, or a shvua. He made a shvua, that for every time he's going to fall through, he's going to fast one day. Which was a very foolish work, because he now told the stipler that he would have to live 90 years to fast all the days that he made up that he's going to fast. So basically, there's no hope for him, right? Because not only does he have the Aveira itself, he now has the Shvuah to do it, to deal with. So the stipler sent him to the Briskerov. And the Briskerov told him, you don't have to fast, not even a single day. So he said, why? So the Briskerov said, because at the end of the day, at this point, you're not a Baal Bechira. He said, you focus on getting your act together. Don't worry about the nether part. You're not a Baal Bechira at this point. So the Shvuah was assuming you're a Baal Bechira. Now what the Briskerov said could be very dangerous. He didn't mean for us to use it as an excuse. What he meant to say is, there's no such a thing as the point of no return. In our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no such a thing as getting stuck in a point where you can't come back. HaKadosh Baruch Hu resets every single day the level of Bechira. There has to be a way back. Proof being that you woke up. Proof is that you woke up, that you're there. And Mekom Mokim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mechadosh B'chol Yoyim Maisa Bereshis. V'noisim Bechira Chadosha, he gives a brand new Bechira La'adam B'chol Yoyim every single day. She'yachal Liyas Toiv Mechadosh. K'ma Shekasev, like it says, La'yakashal Baba Yoyim Shuvah. You're not going to stumble into the Aveira on the day that you do tshuva. So the bottom line is, when, be'ezes Hashem Yizbarach, I don't want to say if, but when you wake up tomorrow morning, you're going to say, Hashem, you gave me back my neshama. That means you reset my p'chira. You reset my choice. And this is particularly true during the days of Elul. Hayom halolu, these days, mem yoyim u'achrayim, in the last 40 days, shohaya b'rotzeh, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu went up and said, you got to be meichel klal yisol for the chet ha'egel. So Haim Atzman, these days in particular, help Libos B'nai Yisrael, the hearts of the B'nai Yisrael, the tshuva to do tshuva. Kasha Dor HaMidbar HaYachareidim Ma'od LaShem B'Yom Eilu. The Dor HaMidbar, during these 40 days, think about it. The Chetah Egel wiped them clean. They couldn't believe themselves what they did, and they weren't either Baalei Bechir. It says that they only sinned in order to pave the way for tshuva for us. But when Moshe Rabbeinu told them there's going to be a second Luchas, and you got a second chance, boy, were they doing tshuva. They were doing an amazing tshuva during these days. And as they were doing tshuva, they imbued within us a kayach of tshuva. It's very important because we're told El, we're like scared of El. You know, El is a bear, El is a this, old, you know, El is going to come out with a big sword, you know, and chop you to bits, you know what I mean? It's not what El is. El means that there are koiches of tshuva that are regenerated within you. Your range of bechira, it's readjusted every single day. And El, it's readjusted even more. Says the Sfas Emes. This is something, a theme that he always works with. Kashem Shachet Nishal Ledairis, right? During this time, Shavasa B'Tamas and Shavasa B'Tamas is the Chet HaEgel. Just like the Chet remain Ledairis. Kama Shekasev Ein Lecha Pekida She'en Ba Mi'oven HaEgel. Every Chet that we do has something to do with the Egel. The Me'la HaTshuva Sha'asu, the Tshuva that they did then. The Tiknu HaChet, which is during these 40 days, Bevada HaYagam Kein Ledairis. Because when they did Tshuva...
Till this Friday, is a Tfilah.
That's right. But we're ready within the week. Within the week after Shabbos Mevarchim El, it says ready you have the Ha'aris of El.
I'm saying, on that though...
You don't have to wait for Friday to do tshuva. You can do tshuva before the rush. It'll be less of a line. What?
Only from Shabbos to Batamba is meant to feel to get El. You'll get El without...
To get El. Got it. Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu, tikkun b'shoirish neshamas b'nei Yisrael b'shamayim. Moshe Rabbeinu said, wait a second. The Chet HaEgel threatens the future of Klal Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu took a Torah in Shemayim and went through the future of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu did not leave a corner in heaven. He didn't check it out. He was Baidi Chametz. He was Baidi Chametz for every single generation that there is. And yes, he saw us with our Nisyayinais, our tests in this insane world that we're living in. Where we are, what we're surrounded. Moshe saw us and said, no. I said, Mecheni no misifrecha, I put my life on the line to make sure that you should be sitting there, that base medrash should be packed. Moshe Rabbeinu saw our file. V'heim ashroshim, those were the roots, shal neshamas b'nei Yisrael, shenim shalu k'kachav mirakia. L'chein, because Moshe Rabbeinu checked us out and demanded a guarantee that we can do tshuva, l'chein b'nakal akoponim lonu, it's easier for us, l'sak and guf yachata. That it's set more for us to be misakim. Val Yedei, and because Shalucha Shnias, the second Luchas Hayabederech Vali Tshuva, was all for people that just stumbled in such a terrible, right? All the worst of errors by the Chet HaEgel, Znos, Avoyda Zara, Giliara, Yeshmichas Damim. And the Luchas Shnias was given for that person. So if you're going to say, I can't open a Gemara, I know what I did, what are you talking about? The whole Luchas Shnias, which is the whole Torah Shabbat Peh. If not for the Luchas Shnias, we would have just had Torah Shabbat Ksav. We would have seen everything in Torah Shabbat Ksav. That means every Gemara, every Tosfos, every Rashba that you're learning, every Magen Avraham, every Taz that you're learning was made for people that blew it, that were over the Chet HaEgel. That's the Luchas Shnias. While Yedei Shel Luchas Shnias Hein Bederech Bali Tshuva Nisha HaOra Shalhem, the Ora remains Gam Ate even now Yoiser much more so My Yomim Shel Luchas HaRashinas than the days of the Luchas HaRashinas. Ki Baalei Tshuva Asyam B'Chela Sagi. Baalei Tshuva always come back with a much greater kayach. So I know from day one, from when you were in pre-nursery, you heard that Rashi Tevis of Elul is Nila Doidi V'Doidi. I am as to my beloved, as my beloved is to me. Okay? Now, says Rav Moshe, what does that really mean? What does it mean, Nila Doidi V'Doidi? So I heard this story from an oncologist that unfortunately, you know, works under very, very difficult circumstances. And he said he was once treating a girl, and they did everything humanly possible. And the situation deteriorated to the point where she was now, Rahman al-Islam, going to be transferred to hospice. And he had to come say goodbye to her, because the hospital was sending her out. The insurance company was sending her out. And that's what happens. You know the story, three people came up to Shammai. And one of them said, they said, okay, Gehenna, do you have any last things? So one of them said, listen, I was a doctor, okay? And... doctor, you know, Toiv Shabiroi from Legehenim. Rav Yaakov Galinsky was in the hospital. He says, the doctor came over to him. He says, what does that mean, Toiv Shabiroi from Legehenim? So he said, first of all, what are you worried about? It says Toiv Shabiroi. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry. That's how it goes. Rav Yassu Chaim Zonnefeld once said, there was a famous Dr. Wallach, gave up his whole life, never got married. He came to Eretz Yisrael. He started the Shari Tzedek Hospital. He started, was it Shari Tzedek he started? He was the first. When the first, there were no doctors. Only, there were only missionaries. They were the only ones that had a hospital. People were dying. They wouldn't go to the missionary hospitals. He was a tzaddik. So the mamash gave up his life. So Reb Chaim, he wants to ask Rabbi Yosef Chaim, what's pshat toiv shabarei from Lagana? So Rabbi Yosef Chaim said, I'll tell you what it means for you. They're going to send you straight into Gan Eden because you saved all those lives. You're going to hear people screaming in Gehenna. You're going to open the door and go in. You're going to start treating them. They're going to say, Dr. Wallach, what are you doing? And he says, I can't let people suffer. He said, that's pshat by you, toiv shabarei. That's what you're going to be. So anyway, so this doctor says, look, I don't want to go to Gehenna. And my argument is, you know how many lives I saved? You saved one life, it's like saving an entire world. You know how many people I did pro bono? You know how many people knocked on my doors in the middle of the night? I never said no. I never ever said no. I said, okay, straight to Gan Eden. Then there was a lawyer. And the lawyer said, you know how many people I got out of jail, mamish, that were caught, framed for no reason. They didn't have a red cent to their name. And I risked my whole career. I took on the DA and I risked my life for them and I brought them back to their families and failed to raise their children. It says, straight to Gan Eden, to Gan Eden. Then the third guy says, I worked for the medical insurance companies. You know how many people I sold policies to that should be able to have? He says, what about me? They said, you? Okay. He says, you can go out of Gehenna, but first there's a 3-week deductible. And you're only out of, right? And you're only out of Gehenna for 180 days. Then it expires. Okay. Whatever our relationship is with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's what it's. Anila Doidi Vidayuli. So anyway, so this doctor told me, Yidat Tzadik, whoever, and I wouldn't like me to say his name, but he's an oncologist. He mamash gave up his whole life. Gave up his entire life, helps people. And I would say certain stories about him, it can bring tears to your eyes, what this person does for people. I mean, living in that world. So he said he's sitting next to this girl and he has to break it to her and he tells her, whatever her name is, he says, you know, there's nothing more we can do for you. And he says to her, the only thing we can do for you is give you a new body. And she says to him, Dr. So-and-so, if you could, I wouldn't take it. So he said, why not? Because he said, then it wouldn't be me. Right? Hashem gave me my life. What's my point of being something else? He says he usually doesn't stay emotional, but at that point he broke down and he started to cry. So I said to him, but isn't it a tragedy? She appreciated what it meant to be me. But we have lives that we appreciate in the morning, that Hashem gave me my life, my neshama, my body, my guf, who I am. Do we have an appreciation for who it is? So you know what Anila Daidi Vidaidi Lizi is, says Ramaisha? I once went to visit a girl that had a heart transplant. And some chacham came in and said this was therapeutic. They showed her heart in a bottle. I think this guy that came in, I think his brain was in a bottle. But anyway, what do I know? So she said to me that she was terribly traumatized by seeing her heart in a bottle. I said, yeah. Could be very traumatic. So this was the question that she asked. And Arya, it's a later, Arya Kaplan has it in one of his books also. He says, if my heart is in a bottle, then who am I? Then who am I? So he said, obviously you see that we're not our bodies. Obviously you see we're in a neshama. So obviously our body is a spaceship for something else. The Chasam Sofer says that Adam and Chava, before the Chet Eitz Hadas, were both deaf and blind. But after the Chet Eitz Hadas, they got their sight and they got their hearing. There's a Medrash. There's a Medrash that says that. So some says, what's that supposed to mean? Before the Chet, they were deaf and blind, and afterwards they got their hearing and seeing. So there's a lot of stories with these after-death experiences, people that were revived and brought back to life. And there are these stories that they looked down and saw what the doctors were doing. And so if you read the studies on this, they're saying that it's very interesting. That they saw their lives, but they weren't seeing through their eyes, obviously, because they weren't in their bodies. They heard exactly what was going on. They could describe to the doctors different things they could have only seen from that perspective. And they said, but what I wasn't seeing, I wasn't hearing. Because it wasn't through my ears. You read a kind of common theme that goes through, because obviously a person's imagination and his training has a lot to do with what he would see at a time like that. But they said that it was seeing like, there's not. You can't see something like that down here in this world. Down here in this world, imagine we're in a submarine, and there's a periscope, right? And the guy's looking out. That's what your eyes are. They're looking out, and your brain is interpreting information. You actually see upside down, right? You see upside down. Your brain interprets what it is, and you, with both your eyes, that's how you see the depth, and you're hearing things, and you're seeing things, and the brain between hearing and seeing is combining it all together. Right, you put on those visual glasses and it plays around with your brain, and all of a sudden you're seeing something else altogether. So what are we really seeing? So in other words, before the chet of the Eitz Hadas, that's what some Sefer says, Adam and Chava didn't have to see through eyes, didn't hear through ears. These are openings in a submarine. These are radios that are allowing us to communicate with the outside world. The world out of the body is a much more powerful world. So Rav Moshe says, what's anila doidi v'doidi li? El is, wake up. Right now you're in a shama that's locked in a space suit. Your space suit is your body. It's a body that's constantly changing. Biologically, you're changing. There are blood tests that can tell you exactly how old you are. To the split second, life is going on. There's going to come a time, it's going to be real life. And that's what you have to focus on. You have to focus on your real life. We say Tehillim, right? We cry our hearts out. Why are we saying Tehillim? David HaMelech had no life. I heard this from Yaakov Meshach. Right? David HaMelech was supposed to die when he was a baby. He had no life. Adam HaRishayin gave him 70 years. So he was literally living on borrowed time. David HaMelech was always under threat of being killed his entire life. The Reb Tzadik says David HaMelech is the shoyrish of Tzadik Varala. And David HaMelech understood, he said, you're threatening me with my life, but I know my life is not my life. It's all borrowed time. I'm living on a borrowed spaceship. I'm parking in someone else's parking space. Any minute someone can come tow me away. Look at it that way. Look at the analogy that way. It must be Hashem sent us that analogy. Right? That's who I am. And that's how David was able to deal with everything that he is. And he said, I wish I can explain this to my children. I wish I can explain this to Klal Yisrael. And that's why he says, the Shlach HaKadosh, David had to go through every conceivable problem that Shayach, that could ever be. He had to go through everything. Because in his Kayach of Tilim, he said to him, wake up. And that's what Rav Moshe says. You're a life. You're a neshama. Right, somebody I heard once one of the Balchuga things, one of the Eishet Torah. Somebody said, "How do I know I have a neshama?" So the person said, "You are a neshama. This is who you are. Deal with the life that you're going to have wherever you are." So I want to finish with this story. That there was a man. He was a chassid of Rav Shlomo of Babiv, the first Rav Shlomo of Babiv. He was the enochal grandchild of the Divrei Chaim. He lost all of his money. He used to be the big guy, and he went into a major depression. And his wife, he wouldn't go to the Rebbe. And his wife ran to the Rebbe and said, do something. So the Rebbe sent a chassid and said, please come to the Rebbe. He said, no, my life is over. So the Rebbe sent a big chassid. And he picked him up and brought him to the Rebbe. You know what I mean? I remember in Camp Aguda once, I had a kid that was like going crazy and I was holding him like this. He was kicking and I brought him to the principal. I was assistant principal. He said to me, that's one shot in Ashri Mishabala Kama Talmidai Biyada. He said, you know, coming to town. So he brought him to the Rebbe. The Rebbe said, I got to tell you a story. He said that there were two chassidim going to the Rebbe of Melech, and there was a big storm outside, and they had no place to go. They banged on a door. The yid said, I'll take you in, but there's a wild party going on over here. I can't guarantee your safety. And they're laying there in the corner trying. One of the party guys, the peasants, really get that Jew, and they start dancing, and they beat him. They throw him to the ground. They do it again. And finally, the other guy says, it's not fair. Why do I get beaten? Let's switch. So they switch, and all of a sudden, the peasants go, hey, why are you always beating this Jew? Let's get the other guy. So they beat him again. So then they come to the Rebbe of Zisha, so the Rebbe, they come to the Rebbe, and Rebbe Malach said, why'd you switch? You shouldn't have switched, he says. A Yid has to know it doesn't always stay dark. It doesn't always stay bleak. You shouldn't have to switch. So the Baba Rav once said, what do you mean, you can't make your life better? You're not going to make your life better? This guy's beating me, I can't say I'm switching. He says, there's nothing wrong with making your life better. But when a person gets depressed and says, you have it good, it's not fair. Why am I paying? Well, my pain becomes it's on your cheshbon, that we love to do that. Yeah, it's only because of you. We love to find someone to blame. That's where you're going down that route, you're finished. If you say to the Rebbe Shlomo, my pain is my challenge. This is my flip phone. This is what I'm going to get my mileage points for. Then stay exactly where you are, because your Yeshua is around the corner, wherever you are. I think we missed Baruch Hu. I'm going to make a minion tomorrow. I try to finish before my cry. Thank you everyone for coming. I think we have a minute.
What should we call this?
What should we call this?